Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. I mean, there's literally a couple million options out there, and we know that you have choices. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you like this show, you can share it with your friends and family. It's how this has grown from, you know, just this little operation to being the number one show in over 20 different countries, according to Chartable, in the government section of iTunes. I don't know how it all works. I just know that's what they say. So we'll take it. Thank you all for this support. If you want to follow me, you can do so on Twitter at Macroaggression. I get wild over there, or as wild as they'll allow me to get. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and you can reach out to me there. Thanks to our sponsors. My God, we couldn't do this show without our sponsors. They make it all work. Any support you show for them goes to help support the show, and we do appreciate that. True Hemp Science has been amazing to us. They're a small business. They're based in Austin, Texas. They are making the best hemp-based CBD out there. No joke. You can go try it out. You can go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions and take a look for yourself. I like, there's two different types that I like. I like the number 19 and I like the number 41. And the reason why I like those as opposed to the other ones is because they have a little bit more of a pick-me-up component to it. So it keeps me going, and I take all this stuff in the morning. So if it's going to keep me going during the day, then it's a good option for me. So take a look and see what you think. Number 19, number 41, those are the ones that I like. But also, this is the product, Bioactive Silicate. It is a 2-ounce bottle. It costs about $40. Take a jug of a 1-gallon jug of distilled water, and you take this, dump the whole thing in there, shake it up. And then every morning and every evening, you do about a 2-ounce shot of this. It's really about the easiest thing you can do for your body. It takes 5 seconds, no exaggeration, to do this. And what Bioactive Silicate does is it kills bacteria and biofilm. It detoxifies the body. The reason for it is to change the pH balance in your body, to alkalize your body. We're supposed to be at 7.0. Most of us aren't. Our diets are really wonky. It screws everything up. What this product, Bioactive Silicate, does is it helps to sort of bring you more in balance with where you're supposed to be, to alkalize the body, to raise the pH level to 7.0. Helps your joints. Helps tendons, it helps tissue repair, it helps flexibility, it helps skin health, wrinkle prevention, sleep regulation. It does quite a bit. And it's one of those things where, at least in my experience with this, I didn't know anything about it until they sent me a box with products and this was in it. And they explained to me, this is the future of medicine. This is the future of the company is bioactive silicate. Have you heard of it? And I was like, no, I don't know anything about it. But it's funny because after that, I started hearing about it in unusual places. I had Celeste Solomon. She was saying, oh, she takes it. I was talking to someone else. They take it. And like, I hadn't heard of it. And now I'm starting to hear about it everywhere. Maybe you'll have the same result. It's called bioactive silicate. Do this. Go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions and just look it up and just read about it. And then you tell me if you have one of these situations where you had never heard of it and then you heard it on this show and now you hear it everywhere, because that's been my experience. So truehempscience.com/macroaggressions on your way out. Use the promo code macro to save yourself a little bit of money. Here comes the beating of the dead horse again, but really, like, I'm not even going to apologize for it because you'll thank me. you'll thank me for the verbal beatings you guys are getting, but like, seriously, my Patriot Supply has been gracious enough to build us a landing page so that we can make this real easy. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the website. On this page, you can find everything that you'll need to know about getting yourself ready with storable foods, water filtration, air purification, seeds, survival coffee, camping gear, energy generation, solar capture. All these things are available there. And it had always been theoretical. It had always been camping supplies and those tinfoil hat wearing prepper maniacs that think that the world's going to end. Well, those people are still out there, of course, but now it's taken on a more serious tone. I think a lot of people are getting over that stigma of, oh, you prepper weirdos and everything. Yeah. Yeah, maybe there are some preppers that take it to the extreme. I mean, we've seen the TV shows. There's Extreme Prepper television show here in America. You can take it too far. You can also not take it nearly far enough. And that is the fear I have for Americans, really everyone, but America in general, man, we are so dependent on this supply chain, which is fine if everything is working and we're working, you know, we're living in a world that's well-oiled and all the machines are functioning and maybe one breaks down, but there's another one to replace it. But man, I'll tell you what, it feels like we're living in a world where everything is not just broken, but intentionally broken. And you don't know what's going to happen next. I'll tell you can be wrong in life about a lot of things, but you can't be wrong in life about if you get yourself in a situation and you are out of food, that's a mistake you only make once. And it costs you. So look, we cannot fix the variables that are coming at us. We don't even know what they are. Okay. There are certain things that you can do. There's a lot of things you can't do, but there are some things that you can. Getting yourself prepared in advance of what's coming is an obvious and logical thing to do. I think where the line is can I afford it? I think that's really where I don't think anybody is in denial that we need this, it's good to have, all those things make sense. The question is, can I afford it? And I think that that's a good question to ask yourself. But I think the follow-up question is, can I afford to not have it? Is buying storable food in advance for, you know, 3 month supply, is it expensive? Well, according to this, My Patriot Supply, with the discount that you get, it would be $747 for 3 months of storable food. Is that a lot of money? Well, off of a retail price of $897. So it's $150 off. Down to $747 for 3 months supply of food for three people. Is that a lot of money to spend? Yeah. What happens if you need it and you don't have it? Would you give anything to go back in time and spend that $750 to know that you were taken care of for 3 months? You could buy yourself some time. You can't buy time, you can buy food. And in this particular scenario, maybe food is what you need to buy you some time. So start thinking about it like a cost-benefit analysis. Start looking at the numbers, divide it up, or take you know, 90 days divided by, you know, or $747 divided by 90 days. Get yourself a daily amount for this food. Figure out if it makes sense to you, and then figure out if it makes sense for you to not have it. And that's all I'm saying. And look, get prepared somewhere. If you want to go through my sponsor, My Patriot Supply, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, please do. Take care of it. Get yourself sorted out. Maybe get some members of your family sorted out and send it to them. Do what you need to do. Or go to the grocery store on your own and get food that way. I really do not care at this point. I just want to make sure that everybody's good. Everybody's thinking about this. You're not dwelling on it, not making yourself insane or crazy or scared, or those are bad things. But being prepared, that's a good thing. And take some of this money. Hell, you know what? At the rate inflation's going, just exchange your soon to be worthless Federal Reserve notes for food. You might find that spending $750 on 3 months of survival food is the best investment you ever made. I don't know. I'm not licensed to give investment advice. I'm just saying I want everybody to be taken care of. That's all. That's the end of it. That's the end of the sales pitch, which I don't even really consider it to be much of a sales pitch. Just a reminder. Like, I'm going to remind you because the media won't. I'm going to remind you because they want you to be ill-prepared for this. I want everybody to be over-prepared for it. It's kind of the theme of this episode, because we're going to get into talking about the digital prison system that they're building up around us. We've been watching it. It's undeniable. The only question is, how well built is it? How detailed is it? How, you know, is it going to keep everybody in? What are the specs of this thing? That's the only real questionable component of this. There is no question of whether or not they're trying to build a digital prison and surround us. It's happening. It's been happening for a while. It's been a fantasy of theirs for a very, very long time, at least a half a century. But sometimes you have to wait for the technology to catch up with your ambition when you're a genocidal mass maniac, mass murder maniac that wants to kill everybody. Sometimes, as Zbigniew Brzezinski talks about in his book In Between Two Ages, the technology isn't there yet. It's there now. It's there now. And they're rolling it out in certain areas, and they're rolling it out in with certain features. But eventually, they'll work out the bugs in the social credit system. And then you'll eat the bugs. They'll work them out, and then you get to eat them. We leave nothing left to chance in the Fourth Reich. I mean, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. So this idea of the Great Reset is the great resetting of the digital prison too. It's like, the digital prison isn't working. Have you tried turning it off and then turning it back on again? Oh yeah, it works now. That's the Great Reset. The Great Reset is the turning off and then the turning on of the technology, just to make sure. So, So the Great Reset is, I think, by definition, a radical socialist plan designed by the elite, and I use that term loosely, to reset the world's economy so that they can insert a centralized and managed totalitarian galactic empire. I mean, I guess that's, let's just go full Star Wars or full China. So it'd be like China, but with a Western feel to it. It's the galactic empire. That's what it is. It's, I mean, we joke about Klaus Schwab being a supervillain. We joke that he's got the Emperor Palpatine outfit on. Like, the idea of the Great Reset to bring everybody together into a centralized form of control is, like, by definition, the empire. from Star Wars. And you don't have to be a Star Wars fan to understand. The Empire were the bad guys, run by the Emperor and Darth Vader and all these guys. And then they had all the stormtroopers, and that was a centralization of power. And then the rebels, meaning like Princess Leia and all these guys, they were the ones fighting against that. So in this scenario, we are the rebels. I had someone say to me that they described me as Han Solo in this scenario. I'm very flattered. I'm no Han Solo. I thought he was awesome. I definitely would have shot Greedo first, though. Bet your ass. I'm not sitting around. I'm not going to be waiting for an answer from him. But be that as it may, the reality of this is that these guys are building a, you know, they're building something that for us, we dip into pop culture and say, you mean like Star Wars, like the Empire there? And you go, yeah, like that. It's a good reference point. Not perfect. But if you were to take a look at what the World Economic Forum is planning, there's a lot of Galactic Empire vibes to it. You will eat the bugs or you will go into the trash compactor. But I think that, look, it's a digital prison, but it's still a prison. People don't voluntarily go into prisons. You have to change the rules on them and put them in prison, or you have to convince them that it is in their own best interest to voluntarily go into this prison. So that's the trick. It works better when the slaves don't know they're slaves. It works better when the prisoners don't realize they're prisoners. So if you can convince the public to just get on board with the program, it's going to go a lot easier for the controllers. Well, it's going to go a lot easier for everyone at first. It's not going to be good for the people that walked into the digital prison. But again, they're essentially the people. You've seen the closed circuit video of, like, I don't, maybe you haven't, I've seen it, like the funny compilation videos of all these people that are on their phones and they're walking and they walk right into a fountain, you know, filled with water, and they don't, you know, because they're not paying attention. There's a lot of people that are going to be on their phones walking themselves into this digital prison and never even notice that the door slammed behind them. Those people, sayonara, you know. It's been nice sharing a planet with you, but if you are unwilling or unable to recognize your situation, then I'm not going to be able to help you with that. You're going to need to look up from your phone for a minute to see what is being built around. It's funny because two of the sweetest people I've ever had on the show, the ladies that could very well be my aunt or something, Alana Freeland and Celeste Solem, are the scariest people in the world to talk to. You know why? Because they know all about the digital prison component. And you sit down with them, and Alana got me, I got a strike on my YouTube video that I put up with her, like, immediately. And then it went on banned video and got 75,000 views. So it's like, you understand why YouTube does not want that up there. But the people that understand this, the researchers that are really working into the digital side of this, I put Whitney Webb in there as well. They understand, they have a more of an understanding of the capabilities of this technology. And because they understand what it's capable of, they can talk to you about it in a way that will scare the shit out of you. And I fully encourage you to go back through a couple episodes for the transhumanism episode I did with Alana, and the other digital episode I did with Celeste Solem, and listen to them break it down. Because I think they do a very good job. They're very measured and obviously very intelligent, and they understand this, and they know it's scary. but they're, because they're, I think because they're women also, they have a way of explaining it in a way, like they're trying to not scare you. But it's scary. It's just, when you realize that they have all of the pieces that they need, that the pieces to build this digital prison are no longer like conceptual and we have to wait a couple decades for them to, you know, for the technology to catch up with our ideas. No, the technology's there. It's ready to assemble it all. That's the problem, is that it had always been in the future. It had always been, once we have this, then we can do that. Or, you know, or the fantasies that these guys had, that Zbigniew Brzezinski had, and that he was very clear about, the limitations that they had to this one world government plan. The limitations were that the technology just wasn't there. But, you know, he's writing that book in 1981, and the technology wasn't there 4 decades ago. It is now. And it's growing exponentially. So the technology that didn't exist in 1981 did exist in 1991. And then that is used, you piggyback off of that, and that technology is used in 2001. And then that is, so it's exponential growth of technology. And so we're at a point where they're trying to corral us into this digital prison. And once they do, the doors on the boxcar shut and you go, oh shit, we're stuck in here. I should have been paying attention. We got to get out. Here's the bad news. If it finally occurs to you that we need to get out, right after you've heard the door to the digital prison close, it's too late. It's too late. At that point, in real prison, and if you saw Shawshank Redemption, and obviously I know it's a fictional movie based on a Stephen King book, but when they shut that door, you know how they had all the prisoners were betting on which fish would break the first night? It's that door shutting and that realization when it dawns on you, oh no, I'm no longer in charge of my freedom. Somebody else is, and they have made the decision that I can't access that. And it hits you. In the fictional prison scenario, it hits these guys when at night, on that first night, when the door slams shut and it locks and it makes that very noticeable metal clang, and it occurs to you, you're not going anywhere. And that's when people break. My fear is that there's going to be a lot of people chanting fresh fish, fresh fish, fresh fish when this happens, when the digital prison slams and the people that have been figured it out for a long time go, first time here. And that guy goes, I want to go home. I don't belong here. And then the guards take you out back and beat you. So this is the problem. Is that once they complete the digital prison, activate it, you know, and have everyone in under it, it's over. Here's the good news. We're not at that point quite yet. There's still time to push back. But I think it's important for us to recognize how they're going to do it, what they're talking about, what the tools will be, so that there's no, you know, so that we have at least an understanding of how they will put this in place so that we can plan accordingly. Are we going to be able to prevent them from making it happen? I certainly hope so. But again, let's just talk about this. So let's start with a concept that we know will be run out for us, and that is that they are going to, and I've used this as an example before, and it might sound, well, it's speculation at this point. But after it happens, you'll look back on it and you'll go, oh yeah, he was speculating about that, but it wasn't really that much of a stretch. And this is what I'm talking about. Creating a false flag online, an online version of what we see with school shootings or mall shootings, or a guy goes in the office and goes nuts and whatever. You know, in the wake of that, there will be all this legislation that says, if only we'd had X, Y, and Z in place, then it would have prevented this maniac from doing these horrible things. If only we'd had gun laws, it would have prevented this guy from going in this mall. Or if only we had had this, you know. Expect that line of thinking and that decision making, that push towards a solution to happen online as well. Just as the justification for a digital identification card. And let's take it as let's use an example from a current case and just see how we could envision this happening. Guy in Buffalo shooter, right? Let's just say the Buffalo shooter, Buffalo grocery store guy. You know, it's hard to keep track of all these guys. So this guy goes into a grocery store with a gun and starts shooting a bunch of people. I think he killed 10 people. Gets taken out of there. Then in the months after that, and this is, I'm making this part up. All right. We're just going to use this as a fictional scenario based on this real occurrence. But let's just say they went back and they said, all right, well, we did a forensic like internet accounting of where this guy has been online, what he's been doing, what he's been up to, who he was. Why did he do this? We went through and we found out this guy had been on Reddit. This guy had been on 4chan. This guy had been on 8chan. This guy had been on Telegram. This guy had been doing all these things. He'd been in all these places. He's using different screen names, you know, maybe, you know, doesn't always use the same name, or he calls himself Disco Dan or something. Yeah, whatever. You know, I mean, he doesn't use his real name. And he's in all these places and he's talking about doing this stuff. And then he winds up doing it. If only we had known who this guy was, we could have stopped this before he went and did this. If only we had known his identity, because he was saying the same things. He was saying he was going to go to a grocery store. He's saying he was going to go shoot everybody. He was going to save. He says he's doing all this. Got his guns. He's ready for the fucking civil war. Whatever, right? Whatever in this fictional scenario. He said he was going to do it, and then he did it. And we would have been able to stop him if it hadn't been for the fact that a digital identification card doesn't exist. But if one did exist and he had to use it every time he logged into Reddit and 4chan and 8chan and Telegram, then we would have known who he was. He might not have even been saying this stuff. But if he had been saying it, we'd say, who's saying all these crazy things about shooting up grocery stores? Oh, it's this guy who didn't live in Buffalo, who lived a couple hours away. Oh, it's this guy. Let's go to his house, knock on his door, see what he's up to, pull him out, take him down to the station, ask him some questions, and get to the bottom of this. If only we'd had a digital ID card. You understand how this is going to be rolled out? That's how they're going to sell it. Not actual reality, not that any of that would ever really work, because, like I just said, if there was a digital ID card that you had to get in order to be online, you probably wouldn't be saying a bunch of those crazy ass things, because you know that the feds would show up at your house. So would it curb online violence? Maybe theoretically it would certainly curb a bunch of the shit talking. But in the end, if someone wanted to do this stuff, they'd probably would be able to do it anyway. But it's not about keeping you safe. That's just the justification they will use to get the internet ID card. Because in the end, let's just be crystal clear about this. The feds don't give a shit if people die from shootings. They don't care. There's a lot of people out there. Mass shootings aren't all that common. These guys deal, you know, there's wars out there that take out millions of people. Mass shootings take out a couple, you know, a dozen people here, a dozen people there. It's statistically insignificant to them. They don't give a shit about protecting you from mass shootings. They want information. They want to know who you are. They want to know who everybody is online, not to keep you safe, but to keep them safe from you. Somebody that would rightly be pissed off with the shit that they're doing. They want to know who you are, because you might come for them. So that this is where we have to kind of understand. If they tell you an internet ID card is there to keep you safe, you can be assured it is not there to keep you safe. It's not about that. That'll be the sales pitch. That's how you'd sell it if you were them. That's how they always do it. So keep that in mind. False flags happening online as the pretext and justification to push and start the conversation. It might take a while, but start the conversation about the internet ID card. And let's piggyback off of that for a second, because here we have Elon Musk and his potential Twitter purchase, which may or may not be in jeopardy. We'll see how it all plays out. But one of the things that he is concerned about, and rightly so, is the bot activity on Twitter. And he said, you know, if it's less than 5%, I can deal with that, because that's what they told the Securities and Exchange Commission in their quarterly filings, that they have less than 5% bots, and that's fine. And my purchase price reflects that. If that turns out to not be true, I want a reduction in my purchase price to reflect the increase in percentages of bots that are on this, you know, whatever. We've heard this conversation. The part that he's not saying, at least not out loud, is that he talked about human verification on Twitter. And everyone's like, yeah, we got to verify humans so we get rid of these bots. Okay, be careful with that. I don't want there to be bots there either. But if it's human verification through a digital internet ID card, and that is why we can get, that's how you get rid of bots. That's the path towards getting rid of bots. Be very careful about getting on that path. Because again, the reason for it makes sense. It's logical. We need to know who you are. If I know who you are and you're online, then I know you're not a bot, right? And you don't want this place to be filled with bots, right? We saw what that can do. So you're going, yeah, you're right. I don't want there to be a bunch of bots. And I know I'm not doing anything wrong. So I have my digital ID card. And you go, wait a second. I just walked into it. So that's what I'm talking about. Be very careful about the push to to take the anonymity out of the internet. It's tempting. It's tempting to want that, because the justification will be, you don't know who you're even dealing with online. You don't know if it's scammers or some, you know, yes, it's me in Nigeria here. You know, you've become I'm the prince of Nigeria, you know, whatever. I mean, there are those scams, and wouldn't it be nice if those scams didn't exist? But that's not what they're protecting you from. They don't give a shit about that. They want to remove anonymity online, and a digital ID card is a way to do that. And because we're all a little bit protective of like our privacy, I mean, we give it away at times, but it's our choice to give it away. When you start doing things like the digital ID card, you're going to get pushback. Rightly so. So before they do that, they're going to need a really good reason to even have the conversation. And my belief is that it will come in the form of them saying that this person was radicalized and anonymous online, and if only we had known who they were, we could have stopped them before they committed this horrible act. So there's that. Okay. Let's talk about the other ways that they're going to corral you into this digital prison. Let's talk about the metaverse, okay? It's kind of clunky and stupid looking, but then again, so is Minecraft and Roblox, you know? These are like 8-bit, like old-timey looking video games that I personally would have never dreamed would be that popular in 2022. You know, they would have been super popular in 1982. You know, when the best we had was like Atari Pitfall, you know, and we were stoked to have that. But now when you have all this like hyper realistic gaming, to have these sort of like low resolution games, a little confusing to me. And the metaverse looks kind of dumb, you know? But here's the thing. It's drawing people in, you know, it's going to start ramping up more and more. I don't think Facebook is going to, I don't think the pivot to Meta and the metaverse is the win that Facebook thinks it's going to be. I, you know, I may be wrong, but I don't know that this is the future of the internet. I mean, and watch me eat my words like a decade from now. And it's like the biggest thing in the world, the metaverse. And I'm like, well, I'm a dummy. But I don't see it yet. But there are multiple metaverses out there. There's like a metaverse that Wendy's has, like the fast food place, which I'm sure is, I mean, there's got to be nothing to do, right? So I'm trying to figure out where the metaverse ultimately goes. Is this like a lounge for people to put on the VR headset and go into this? Does it replace nightclubs? Does it replace the relationship you have down at the local bar? Is this, I got off work, I came home, had some dinner, put on the VR headset and went to the virtual bar? I mean, you got to have a good look at yourself in the mirror, I would think, at some point. Certainly would help to depopulate the planet. You out there not getting laid, not ever going anywhere, you know, just sort of everything, you know, internalizing everything in a VR headset. Ooh, very dangerous, you know, very dangerous. In this current incarnation, I don't think the metaverse is much of anything. But keep in mind, Facebook is a, you know, $250 billion corporation that has the ability to make bad ideas reality simply by sheer force of will and money. So they can make the metaverse a thing, even if it's not even really all that cool. And that is going to peel away a certain a percentage of the population into normalizing the idea of putting on a virtual reality headset and disappearing for a while. Now, we all do it online anyway, or in music or whatever. So there's nothing inherently wrong about the concept of escapism a little bit. But where I get suspicious or cautious, I guess, is when big tech is offering it to me, because I just don't trust them with their given their track record. So I think it's something for us to think about. And in a subset of the metaverse would be like Internet 3.0 is what they're calling it, right? Like the next version, the next incarnation of the internet, and how that's going to work and what that's going to be. And is that going to be just a more interactive feel? Well, fine. If it's more interactive, that might make it cooler. It will more than likely make it the reasoning, you know, what they use to get you into this digital prison. It's where the action's happening. It's where all the interaction's happening. It's in the metaverse, and the metaverse is here. And once you go in the metaverse, it's like that, you know, they got you. Or once you convert a percentage of your attention onto the metaverse, like we do with social media, we take an hour of our day that we might normally spend with our families or walking our dogs or maybe even doing something as equally pointless as watching TV, you know, but instead we do that. We put an hour into Twitter. So we're already making these trade-offs with our time and our energy. The question is, will it get to a point where there's no trade off. It's just, you're not trading for something else. There is nothing else. That's my fear. We've got a whole new industry, and I'll say that we'll put this off of Internet 3.0, a whole industry of smart contracts that are being managed. Currently, smart contracts are running off of like mostly Ethereum-based smart contracts. But I don't know that that is set in stone. I think there's a lot of room for things to be flexible. It's not to say that you can't have Bitcoin or, you know, blockchain-based smart contract. In fact, I'm they're working on that. I don't know how that's all going to shake out. I don't know if there's room for multiple versions of smart contracts, but at some point they're going to try to put all the contracts online as well, which makes sense from a technological evolution standpoint. I work in real estate. We deal with paper contracts forever. DocuSign came around and changed the world in real estate, you know? So, and I never viewed DocuSign as being a problem, and I still don't. A digital signature that was verifiable and it held up in court and it was accepted by real estate industries and it was accepted as a legal signature in a contract. And once that happened, it made everything a whole lot faster. It streamlined things. I'll send that out to you for signatures. Man, when I was starting in real estate, I remember I sold 12 houses one day back in 2004. It was crazy. And I had to generate all these contracts. I had to print them all out and I had to take them to this investor guy group and have all these different people sign them. And it took all day. It was like an all day thing. If I was doing that now, it would just be, you know, it'd just be DocuSigned it and I'd email it to him. And as soon as it was done and signed by everybody, it'd be sent right back to me. That's evolution. That's progress. That's amazing. And there's nothing inherently nefarious about that. But understand where this can go when you start to have smart contracts that are now, it's not just DocuSigned, but it's now living online. And that has its own sort of repercussions. Because we will get to a point where we will become dependent on that. And we won't even be able to imagine a time before smart contracts. Right now you're going, what the fuck's a smart contract? Well, there will be a time, a decade from now, when you'll be like, I don't know how we would have ever, I don't even remember how we lived without smart contracts, you know? So we keep our eyes open, right? Because if you're going to invite everybody into your digital prison, you can't just beat them with batons and force them all in there. I mean, you could, but it works a lot better if you just put cheese in the mousetrap. You know, you give them a reason to go in there. You give them something that they want. You give them something that works. You give them a smart contract that works. And they use it and they become dependent on it. And then they can't get out of not using it because this is how we've always done it in the 10 years I've been doing it. Now we've always been, and I don't know how to do it any other way. So part of the digital prison that they're building is just assimilating us and having us get comfortable with this process of doing things differently. And again, there's aspects of it that are going to be sold to you as convenient because in actuality, they will be convenient. It'll be a whole lot easier to do it that way. It'll make sense, time saving, documented, everything about that, a better mousetrap. Great, let's do it. But just be careful. Because it's luring you into this and getting you into a situation where you feel that there's no way around it. And then that takes me to the next point, which is the money component of this. And talk about normalizing it and talking about not being able to feel like you can live life without it. We're going to get ourselves to a point where the money is digital. We can fight it. We should fight it. Cash Fridays, you know, all these things, these are great. Don't give up your money. Don't give up cash. Don't give it up. Don't give up silver. Don't give up gold coins. Don't give up physical money, even if you hate fiat currency. And I do as much as anybody, probably more. Don't give it up. Because when they get you to a point where you've got, where all money is digital, then there will be the good guys. There'll be the good guy digital money out there or currency, and I don't want to have this debate about, you know, the Bitcoin guys that will be digital money on the right, on the correct side of humanity. When I say right, I don't want it to be misconstrued as me meaning conservative. I just, you know, program, you know, like digital money that is blockchain based and fully transparent and here, you know, like that's the idea behind Bitcoin. Rock solid, right? The idea behind some of the other central bank digital currencies, disastrous, right? So again, words matter. The definitions matter. When someone starts talking to you about the dangers of cryptocurrencies, you can say, what are you talking about? And they say, well, Bitcoin. You go, well, that's, are we talking about Bitcoin or are we talking about cryptocurrencies? Because there's different things. Are we talking about central bank digital currencies? That's a whole different hybrid too. And that's what I'm most concerned about. I'm not worried about Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is fantastic for what it is, you know, a limited supply, digital, transparent, all the things that it is. There's reasons to like, you know, and I've talked about this too. There's reasons to like Monero because it's private and it's the opposite of some of the Bitcoin. It's got some similar components. And so there's, so again, digital currencies are not by default evil. I use PayPal. We all use like, and PayPal, I got my problems with PayPal, believe me. We use, you know, ACH, digital checks and things like that, direct deposit. We've been digital with our money for a while. We've been walking into it. So it's not to say that digital money equals evil. The problem is digital money can equal evil when it's a central bank digital currency that is programmable. And when they start to conflate the two between crypto and CBDCs, and they go, whatever, it's the same thing. No, it's not. No, it's not the same thing. It's most definitely not the same thing. They want you to believe that it's the same thing. They want to lump it all in and go, well, you know, it's just crypto. It's not. And central bank digital currencies, we've done episodes on that. I'm not going to get into the weeds on how it all can go wrong, but just know this, that if you've got yourself a central bank digital currency that is programmable, you can make the money do all kinds of things. There's almost no limit to how creative you can get with that money, including setting it to expire. Because the jobs report came out and the Christmas spending was way down. We just got that report and retail sales are in the toilet and Joe Biden needs to get reelected and we need to, you know, do something to make the economy better. So we're setting 30% of your CBDC US digital currencies to expire in the next 90 days. Better start spending them or they're going to evaporate right out of your account. They're just going to turn to sand. So again, this is, let's start thinking about the inherent downsides to this as well, because it's going to be sold to us as benefits. They're going to try and convince you to get into this digital prison with the benefits, and there will be real benefits to digital currencies. Just make sure that you're armed with as much information and sort of mental ammunition as you can get to also counter that debate, because there's going to be some very serious downsides to this as well. And you're going to need to look at the downside, because they're not going to be telling you about it. You're going to have to be thinking about this on your own. So the removal of cash from the economy is part of this digital, obviously it's part of closing the doors of a digital prison. When you have cash, you still kind of have, you're still outside of that economy. And they don't want that. It's untrackable. They want to know everything you're doing for your safety, of course. So we've got, and look, it's not to say that the US dollar can't be inflated away, because they've been doing that for a long, long time through the printing press for the first half of the century, and then digital printing press for the second half of the century, you know, as technology improved. But if they have central bank digital currencies, they can inflate the money supply however they want. You know, just think of the sort of tricks that they can use with regard to that sort of digital money that isn't on a public blockchain for the world to see and scrutinize and record. And, you know, instead it's managed by the Federal Reserve. Great. What could possibly go wrong? Okay. Now we move into the great reset part too of this, because that's going to really start to funnel people into this digital prison. Artificial intelligence. Okay, look, just go to the World Economic Forum's website, weforum.org, and play around on there and go through and just take a look at the different sections that they've got. Artificial intelligence, talking about automated decision making, things like that. It's bad. Now, look, if they want to run AI programs to manage, you know, traffic flow patterns and things like that, whatever. But we know it's not going to stay there. We know that this is going to be used to automate decision making of human beings, too. So the artificial intelligence component of this is something to keep an eye on. You know, I had Alex Cranier on here a couple months ago. He used to run a hedge fund in Monte Carlo. And we talked about AI. And he's the only guy that I've talked to that made me feel less scared about it. Glad I talked to him too, because he said that a lot of the things that they have planned, you know, that they talk about AI's capabilities are so far out of the reality for AI ever achieving that it's just pipe dreams. And he said that that's like 80% of the stuff they talk about that is just fantasy, will never happen, can never happen. You know, he's talking about the computing power necessary for like a Tesla to recognize the difference between a balloon going across the road and a child going across the road, and that it's fucking impossible for it to calculate all of the information that needs to go into that decision making in the amount of time that it takes. And he just said a lot of that stuff is never going to happen. So that made me feel a little bit better, but only a little bit better, because I know that they intend to make it happen. their intentions haven't changed. Maybe the technology isn't ever going to catch up with their devious intentions, but I know that their ideas, what they want, that hasn't changed. Whether they can actually make it work through artificial intelligence or some other set of programs, that is yet to be determined. But I know that what has not changed at all in this scenario is their desire to make that, you know, to want that to happen. So aspects to keep an eye on: cybersecurity is going to be huge. You know, that's going to, you can't have a prison that isn't always focused on security, right? You've got to have a cybersecurity component to this that'll be sold to the general public. ESG scores are going to be a big part, a real big part of this digital prison. And James Lindsay's done great work on this. He's talking about, he's all been out of shape about ESG right now these days. I mean, normally it's critical race theory and tranny story time for him, and I'm with him on all those things. But ESG has really pissed him off. I think he's coming to the understanding that a lot of us have come to, which is this is a social credit score for corporations. And if you think of the sort of manipulation that these guys can do to humanity with social credit scores for individuals, that same level of control and adjustment and prompting and corralling and all that can happen, it's guilting, shaming, manipulation, all that stuff that can happen in a personal social credit system can all happen and will happen in a corporate social credit system. And that's what ESG is. So it's in everything is digital. environmental, social, and governance. You know, they're all about data. They're all about tracking your environmental footprint. They're all about assigning a score to you, an ESG score, a score that measures. They've got to come up with some criteria, some sort of scale for measuring this, right? And so the environmental and social and governance has come up with a number system, and they're going to give you a number just as a, you know, as some sort of barometer to tell like where you are on the list of that. Oh, am I in the middle? Am I in the middle of being, does that make me a good citizen or am I half bad? I'm still polluting. I'm still out there expelling carbon into the atmosphere. But the ESG corporate social credit score, the personal social credit score, these are going to be the things that really drive a lot of people into these digital gulags. Climate. You know, you would think that the climate would have nothing to do with digital technology. But you would be wrong, of course. You go outside and there's nothing more natural than the clouds and the, well, I guess I shouldn't say the clouds these days. they're so fucking unnatural. Actually, it's the worst example I could have possibly given. I go outside and I look at the clouds out there and they're all natural. Wait, no, they're not. They're all fucking chemtrailed. What am I talking about? Theoretically, you would go outside and nature would be out there just being nature, right? It'd have no digital footprint to it at all. But these guys have found a way, or they're going to find a way through climate lockdowns to measure carbon in the atmosphere. We're not even going to get started on how that will be a gigantic scam or how it already is. Measure carbon in the atmosphere, come up with some number that they've picked out of their ass that is the mark that you cannot be above that. And then anything above that, they'll tax the shit out of you, make your social credit score go down, and maybe even put you in a digital prison or whatever. It's all going to matter. So the climate, which theoretically shouldn't have any sort of digital aspect to it at all, is most definitely going to have a digital aspect to it, because they're going to try to quantify it. They're going to try to quantify how much worse the climate is today than it was a year ago, and how much did you guys contribute to that, and how much should you be punished for your contributions to making the climate worse. Mind you, the measuring, the calibration, all of that stuff will be completely subjective, flawed, and full of shit. Just know that. But still, they'll use that. They'll say, well, you know, we measured and the line's here and you're above the line, so you have to pay the carbon tax. And what does that do? It modifies your behavior. You go, well, yeah, it's bullshit and all, but I don't want to pay this tax. I can't pay this tax. Next time around, I won't pay that tax. Next time around, I'll make sure that I'm not driving to Vegas to go see that concert with my friends. I'll just go to the movies instead at home where I don't have to drive. So again, subtle, manipulative behavior modification through social credit scores, social credit systems, ESG systems, ESG scores, behavior modification. So you wind up in a digital prison. You're in this prison. You might not even recognize it because it's been so subtle. You've sauntered into this digital prison in such a subtle way that you danced your way into it. You didn't even realize you were doing it. That's the most devious part about this, is that a lot of people will wind up living in this, becoming a part of this, not even recognizing how much of themselves they've given up, how much of their freedoms they've given up. Digital healthcare will be a part of this. We've got to see what's going on. You've got to take the digital pills that tell us whether, you know, what your levels are. This is just technology, guys. There's nothing nefarious about this. We're going to give you a pill. It's got an RFID sensor in it. It's going to go through your body. It's going to tell us where all these other things are. You're going to need to take this every day, but we're going to, but because of that, that's going to feed back into this computer. It's going to crunch all these numbers, and we're going to know whether or not we should raise your life insurance policy, because you're about to fucking die. You just don't know it yet. So your policy, like, you know what I mean? Like, think about it like that. So digital healthcare is most definitely an aspect of this that they want to get into. And I would think that, if the powers that be have taken control of your health because you have voluntarily, or maybe even involuntarily, decided that you're going to start swallowing the digital pills, the pills that Borla talked about at Pfizer, you know, on those panels. I'm not making this up. I'm not speculating about digital RFID pills. They've announced them. They're talking about them openly in the public. But if you get to a point where that's the norm and you're taking your pills, you can never claim to be free. You're in the digital prison. You're just expecting it to be bars. It's not going to be bars. That's not how it's going to work. If you're expecting the warden to walk by and slam the door and, you know, click the key, and then you're shaking the bars yelling Attica, it's not how it's going to be. It's more subtle than that, which is way more dangerous and totally less fun. Not that prison's going to be much fun, but this is a, you know, it's a world controlled by smart tech. It's digital thermostats. And, you know, so again, it's not so much that you're in an actual prison, but when you no longer have control over how warm or cold it is in your own house, because your Nest / Google smart thermostat is feeding all that data into a big AI computer that's going, if you keep, yeah, I know it's cold outside, but if you turn that heat up one more degree, it's going to trigger you. It's going to throw you into a new level where now you're paying 8 times as much for energy and your social credit score is going down, and it's modified your behavior. And you're going, I can turn the heat up. I want to turn the heat up. I'm just not going to. How do you measure that? Is there a social credit score that can measure that? How do you quantify inactivity? How do you measure the things that you wanted to do but decided you weren't going to do because you didn't want some sort of repercussions to happen to your digital identity? They've already built a digital voodoo doll of you. You just don't know it, or you just don't think about it. And they're building a digital prison. Are you going to go voluntarily, or are they going to have to drag you away kicking and screaming? That's really the question. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression. The website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can go to Amazon. I've got 3 books available. You can buy them there too. If you want to get the digital versions, go to the website. You can reach out to me directly. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.